This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show!
Hello everyone and welcome to Podcast of a Thousand Holds. My name is Mike, and here with me today is the promoter of Limitless Wrestling, which I talk about a lot on this show, Randy Carver. Randy, how you doing today?
I'm doing great, man. How are you?
I just got out of work, and I'm looking forward to going to bed when we're done talking.
That sounds like a good plan.
Yes, but it's going to be hot, like 90 today, so it's not going to be fun sleeping either.
It's nuts. It's already hot right now.
It was snowing Sunday, like,
yeah,
50 miles north of me in Rangeley,
yeah.
You know, like a plowable amount of snow, and today, Thursday, it's 90 degrees.
Yeah, I'm looking at the thermostat right now, it says 81.
Yeah, I think we've managed to hit all four seasons in the last 5 days.
That's usually how it goes when we go from spring to summer.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a bit ridiculous sometimes. So anyhow, yeah. Randy, like I said, you're the promoter of Limitless Wrestling. I gotta say this, you're 20, right?
Yes, I am.
That is crazy. You promoted your first show September 2015.
Yeah.
And so you're 18, and like, to me that's amazing, because like,
I appreciate that.
When I was 18, you know, I just graduated high school, like, you know, a month before or whatever. The last thing I was thinking is, like, I'm going to take a risk and try to promote a wrestling show. So, because to me, I even look at it now, like, it's such a financial risk, because if people don't show up, I mean, you're it's on you.
Right, exactly.
So, my question is this, like, how did you get into to the point where at 18 you could contact people and to have and book them for shows? I mean, where did you get your start in wrestling?
Well, I was lucky enough to like have some real good contacts that I made through the state of Maine, so I could travel around, ring announce, and just meet new people, see new people. And I had this idea, you know, probably a year and a half before it actually came to fruition. So I knew that I wanted to figure out what I wanted to use for a roster. I know I wanted to make it different than anything that was going on here. So
Yep. You
kind of travel around, you make contacts, and then you figure out what you want to do. But for my start, I got my start a couple years before that. It was, I want to say it was my sophomore summer in high school. So it must have been like 2013. I started doing ring crew for IWE.
Yep.
Which was based out of Brewer. And
yep.
then a couple months later, they needed a ring announcer, and it just kind of fell into place.
So after IWE, I mean, if I remember correctly, like, how did you get, like, you started ring announcing down in, like, Connecticut, didn't you?
Yeah. So that was a lot thanks to Johnny Torres, actually, because
okay.
He started booking for Paragon League Wrestling.
Yep.
So when he started doing that, he brought me down as a ring announcer, and that was my first experience outside of Maine. And then through that, I ended up getting booked for Tijuana Wrestling in New York, a couple different promotions in Massachusetts. So once the end of 2014, early 2015 came around, I was traveling around to numerous different states. I had, I think, three different states per month that I was hitting regularly, which is pretty neat for a ring announcer, because usually you see them grounded, you know, in a certain state or a certain area, like
yep.
within a state, because, you know, most promotions have their own ring announcers. So it was really cool for me to be able to do that and meet a lot of different people.
Of guys in New England that travel around ring announcing, there's only like really two others I can think of, Bobby Cruz and Rich Palladino.
Yep. Yes, exactly.
So that's
the only other one I know of that, you know, like Matthew James, who's the Blitzkrieg ring announcer. He does most every other show that Rich doesn't do in like the Mass Connecticut area.
Okay, all right. So that's pretty impressive. And let's just step back for a second. I hate to put an age on things, but you're like 15, 16, traveling to Connecticut, New York to do ring announcing.
Yeah.
So, like, how you get,
weird.
How you getting down there? When you don't have a license.
So legit, the first couple of shows, I had to beg my mom to take me because I didn't actually have a license.
Yeah.
I had my permit, so obviously you can't drive, like, out of state on your own. You have a lot of restrictions. So the first, like, I don't know, I'd say four or five she drove me to. And then once I got my actual license and didn't have any restrictions, I was lucky enough to get a car very early. So it was just I would get a bunch of wrestlers together and try to pitch these carloads to promotions, so it wasn't just me traveling alone. And usually it would work. So it would be myself. I know a lot of them, it was myself, Ace Romero. Now it's a lot of, like, Danger Kid, Aiden Agro, and Alexander Lee. We all travel together, sometimes Eric Greenleaf, too.
Yep.
And we just got these carloads together, you know, when I was 16, and then from years past that, to just make it affordable for us. And then it was just a lot of fun road trips going wherever.
Now, obviously you were a wrestling fan growing up.
Oh yeah.
So, like, what's your first, like, memory of wrestling?
This is always funny because, like, everyone I talk to, they have such a, like, distinct early memory. I don't.
Neither do I.
I watched wrestling when I was real young, and then I had a couple figures, and then I kind of fell out of it. And then my first actual memory of sitting down and watching a show was the 2010 Royal Rumble. Before that, like, I remember when Trevor Murdoch and Lance Cade won the tag titles, and that's so I was watching around that, like, 2007 to 2010 period, but I don't have any distinct memories till the 2010 Rumble.
Do you? Did your parents watch wrestling? Your mom or your dad?
No, it was actually, like, a big mistake that I ever really watched the 2010 Rumble, because I borrowed a DVD from one of my buddies, and the DVD was in the wrong case, so I got disc 2 of the Royal Rumble. And that's I put that in because, like, I didn't love wrestling yet, but I, like, didn't seek it out. So I put that in, and that's kind of what sparked it for me. And then from there, I watched a lot of WWE when I could, but it was, like, a lot of Impact because they had the Impact rerun on Sunday mornings. So I would throw that Impact rerun on Spike, like, every Sunday morning. So 2010 to, like, 2012, I was watching, like, a shit ton of wrestling through that rerun and then whatever I could find on TV.
I'm kind of in the same boat. I don't remember what I ever saw first. It's just always been there because my dad was a wrestling fan, so, like, we would rent the tapes
right
and whatnot. My first, like, big event I remember watching live was WrestleMania 4 on pay-per-view.
Okay.
But, like, he used to rent all the tapes, so I don't have that moment either where I was just like, oh, I watched, you know, Chief J Strongbow and, you know, lost my shit for him. And you know what I mean? Like, I don't have that either. So I'm there with you. I find it hilarious that you say your mom and dad weren't wrestling fans because, like, they're at every Limitless show. I mean,
oh, yeah.
You know?
Well, like, I kind of transformed my mom. Like, she likes wrestling a lot now. Like,
yep.
And even dad, like, he will, whenever Raw was taping in the kitchen, like, he would sit out there and watch it. As much as he, like, bitched about them all being taped, he would watch it. So,
yeah.
They actually enjoy the shows. Like, they go to Limitless, and then my mom used to go to Beyond shows with me sometimes.
Yes, but I've actually seen photos.
Yeah, and she's, like, she's actually more of an independent wrestling fan because she thinks it's real cool how it's done. Dad's still not huge into anything, but he has a good time when he's at the shows. They're a great help because they do the doors, they run the merchandise, and it's shit that, you know, I wouldn't trust, you know, just anyone doing that.
Oh,
so
no,
it's perfect kind of how that works out.
No, it's awesome. Like, it's really cool. Like, I've talked about it with Roy and Mikey and others and everything as well. Like, it's the fact that, you know, like, you're running this promotion, kick-ass promotion, by the way. I can't say that enough.
Thank
and
you.
Then, like, you know, your mom and dad are there supporting you, like, 1,000% and helping out, you know.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
It's crazy because not every kid would get that, so it's very cool to have.
Yeah, no, that's really, really cool. So when did you first find out about independent wrestling?
It was like late summer 2008 because I saw a poster. I remember it like distinctly. I was leaving the YMCA and I saw a poster hung up that had Doink the Clown on it. And I knew that he was like a wrestler. So like by the promo picture. So I'm like, What the hell is this? And it was a poster for a NAWA show.
Yep.
I think it was September of 2008. But the show had happened like 2 days previous. Ah. So I'm like, shit. And I took the poster regardless because it had a website on it. And then I kept, you know, the website wasn't updated for like another week and a half. So I'm like, what the hell?
Yeah.
And finally it updated with a new poster. And I just had to really convince my mom to take me to the next one. But that ended up being my first show, which was October of 08 for an NAWA show. My first independent wrestling show.
Was that down in Fairfield?
It was actually right in Brewer.
Right in Brewer.
It was when they had been running Brewer for about a year at that point, from what I understand. And that was actually one of the last NAWA shows from that period because that ended up switching over to IWE in January of the next year. So. Yeah.
Did you even know independent wrestling existed prior to seeing that poster?
I had no clue because I had an idea because I want to say that I had seen a documentary that WWE had put out where somebody touched on it. But when you don't know about it and somebody says something, it just kind of goes in one ear and out the other.
Yep.
But I had gone to a WWE event in like June or July whenever they came to Bangor in like 2008.
Yeah.
And that had hooked me on the live experience of a pro wrestling show. So when I found that poster, like I still didn't even know what we were going to see because, you know, what you have a one track kind of WWE mind at that point.
So, oh yeah, absolutely.
It was much different. Like I didn't know what to expect, but it was awesome.
So when you started going to independent shows, like did you then just start finding like, you know, that there's more independent leagues and everything around that way?
Yeah, and pretty quickly actually, because what I did was at the first show, I took a poster and I wrote down everybody's names who was wrestling.
Yep.
And I went home and I searched them all out and tried, and I found some database of, you know, wrestling, like I would resemble it to like a cagematch.com or whatever that is.
Oh,
that
cagematch.net. Yeah. Okay. Was it the New England Independent?
I have no idea.
There used to be a website called the New England Independent. It kind of phased out around that time, I want to say. And that would cover all the shows in New England. You can still find it on the Wayback Machine. It's pretty neat, actually. And that would like tell
it
you all the
could have been that.
Huh?
It definitely could have been that.
Yeah. But anyway, so go ahead.
I have no idea what it was, but I found this database where I found most of the wrestlers on there. And then I saw like that they were wrestling in different towns, like in Maine or in, that's how I found out about the Milo shows that NAWA was doing.
Yeah.
They were doing like, I just saw these different towns they were wrestling in, different people. So from that database, I found NWA on Fire, NECW. And then eventually through that database, I found Ring of Honor, which is when either just around when they started or a little after when they started broadcasting on HDNet.
Okay.
So and then I ended up finding that channel. So that I started watching Ring of Honor, probably a couple months after attending that show, because you just kind of put the pieces together when you find all this stuff. But, I got immersed in it real quick because I was just very interested in how this worked. And especially because like the rosters weren't the same for each show.
Right.
So you find new people every time, and it was very interesting to like look them up, see where they've wrestled, get some kind of knowledge about them, and then find other people.
Yeah, I know for me, like there's been a lot of different independent groups in Maine, and I'm not disparaging any of them when I say this, but a lot of the times, like, a new group will start up, and it's the same guys with a different name, or different,
yeah,
you know, different
exactly.
three-letter combination, four-letter combination, and it's the same core group of guys, and so it always just, like, and then, you know, and again, I'm not being disparaging by any means, but, like, it is what it is, you know, it's,
yeah,
and then, like, I would sit there, and I would watch, like, I would see, like, you know, like, you have PWG in California, which is, like, a super indie, you know, and you have Ring of Honor, which I don't even know if you can call Ring of Honor super indie anymore, because, I mean, it's like, one, it's like, I don't know, if you were to put
them in... they're number three, so I don't know.
I don't know, if you were to put them in order, I think between Impact and ROH, if you're looking at United States leagues, they switch back and forth, kind of. But, you know, you like, for instance, today you have PWG, like I said, as a super indie. You have, like, AIW, you have Russell Circus, you have Evolve, you know, and then you have, like, Beyond. And I was always like, why can't we get something like that here? Why can't we get something
right.
like that in Maine? Because, like, it's possible, I guess. And then now we have Limitless, which, you know, you're bringing in great guys, top names. They're putting on awesome shows. I mean, awesome matches. You're putting on hell of a shows. And, like, for me, like, when I go to an indie show, I usually go with the expectation of I'm paying $10 to get in or $12 to get in. There'll be 5, 6, 7, 8 matches on the card. If I get one good match, it was worth my money. That was my level of expectation when I was going to, like, indie shows, no matter where it was. And then now with,
yeah.
like Limitless, like, when Mikey and I talk about it, and again, I'm not trying to blow smoke up your ass by any means, but it's just like I'm going to get one lesser match, I guess, or one not good match out of the 10 that are on the show, and even that match is going to be a great match, probably.
I appreciate that, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, it really is. And so the other thing I always had, too, was like, and I don't know if it's me being a negative person, but like, a lot of times you'll see a quote-unquote headliner come in, and I'm just going to say his name. I don't care. Jimmy Jacobs was the one that really sold it home for me. Champ Matthews had ran a show in Fairfield. He had Jimmy Jacobs on the card. I don't know if you were there for that one or not. I remember it.
Yeah, he had Jimmy quite a few times, actually.
Well, this was the first time. This was the biggest house I'd ever seen in Fairfield. And basically...
Okay, yeah, I was there. That was the cage match one, right?
No, it was before that show.
Okay.
It was before that show, actually. The best match that night was Hudson, Matthews, and Chris Hamrick in a triple threat match.
Okay, I don't think I was there.
Well, anyways, but Jimmy Jacobs wrestled, I want to say, I think maybe it was Mike Bennett in the main event. I can't recall. I could look it up. But anyways, he was just going through the motions. You know what I mean?
Okay.
And it was really frustrating because it's like, you know, I kind of came here to see you. I want to see what you can do. And, like, there's 350 people crammed in here. And it's like he was just kind of putting in a half effort. And so it's like, to me, like, a lot of times when I go to, like, an indie show and I see a name on there, I used to not get all excited or get worked up. Like, okay, I'm going to meet you, but I'm going to watch you have your match. And you're just like, and I understand there's 40 people, 50 people, 100 people in here. And you're just kind of going to get your shit in and be done.
Yeah.
And that was kind of my thought process. And then, like, I saw Zack Sabre Jr. against Chris Hero at Limitless in January of 2016. And it was just like they tore it up for a half an hour. It was just crazy.
Yeah.
Could not believe, like, what they did and everything. And it's just like, this is the difference. Like, this...
Yeah.
This changed my point of view on a lot of things, like, when it comes to, like, spending
it's
money.
Tough and, like, there's honestly a lot of different factors, like, that could go into something like that.
Yeah.
Jimmy Jacobs match, for instance. Like,
yeah.
You know, Maine had a really bad stigma of wrestling. Like, that was obvious. And I think even the fans, like, had an idea that that was a thing.
Yeah.
A couple years ago.
Yeah.
But... There was just a really bad reputation behind Maine wrestling because of whether it be bad business, and this is not just within, you know, the past 5 to 10 years. You know, this is a while back, and this
oh,
is
yeah.
numerous promoters, numerous promotions. Like, there was, you know, bad business, low crowds, low money coming in. And then just, I don't know, just a lot of stupid stuff went down so that it had a bad reputation. So, when, you know, guys who were in bigger spots would use, like, the main shows to try to fill up a weekend if need be, come down here, get whatever for pay, sell some merch. And, you know, sometimes some guys would go through the motions, and you could tell that was happening, obviously. Yep. But, you know, other circumstances could be, you know, there's been some bad rings that have gone around the main circuit. So,
I've heard that one.
You know, these guys in bigger positions don't want to damage their bodies in a shitty ring, you know, and I totally understand that. But there's a lot of different circumstances that could go in, is what I'm just trying to say. Because
Jimmy
Jacobs
that.
Is a great guy, but I totally understand where you're coming from, because I've seen the same thing happen.
Yeah.
But that was the big thing, is like, throughout year one, it was a big feeling out process of, like, you know, who can build this company with me? And then for bigger names, it's like, who's going to come in here and bust their ass and give me, you know, the match that myself and the fans are expecting to see? Like, I think right now, especially, we have the best circulating roster of, like, really motivated individuals to give a great match every time, which is, like, we're trying to build this platform to, number one, you know, send the fans home happy and keep them coming back. And number two, give the wrestlers a platform where they can be creative with a match, have a match they're proud of, have a match they can send to other promotions to get booked other places, and just kill it, honestly, as cliche as it sounds.
No, I absolutely get it. I mean, like, I look at myself, like, I'm a very cheap person. So, like, I go to an indie show and I'm going to spend $10. Like you said, I'm looking for that one match. There's never been an indie promotion in Maine where I'm going to shell out $35 for a ticket before.
Right. I think a lot of people share the same sentiment.
Yeah, but, like, you know, when you, like, for instance, this coming Monday, May the 21st, when tickets go on sale for your next show, which is July 21st in Westbrook, you'll have $35 coming your way via PayPal instantly.
Yeah.
No doubt about it. And I don't even know, like, you know, what that entails as far as, you know, who the headliner is that you get the gimmick with or not. But still, like, I don't even hesitate. Like, I buy my son a $35 ticket, you know? And yeah. So, because I don't want to sit in the back. I want to be right up front, you know?
Right. I had a lot of, like, I don't know. I was weary about, you know, bumping ticket prices, because I know, like, other than big time wrestling is the only thing that's come to town other than WWE that has been, you know, priced higher than us.
Right.
Because I know they've done like the $75 to $100 ticket packages.
They did. Yeah. I remember one year they did, like, it was $125. You got a front row ticket. You got, you know, stuff from the wrestlers there and everything. But yeah.
Yeah. It's like, I mean, almost always it's either the, you know, the 12 and 10 or the 10 and 8.
Yeah.
And, like, I have to, like, think logically, like, you know, if we run every 2 months and we produce the shows that we do, I think we're giving a fair price all
Absolutely.
Around. But it took a lot to just, you know, get up the courage to say, you know, these are what we're rolling with for ticket prices. Like, because, you know, the norm has been always just different. So,
and people do get used to that. They get used to that 10 and 12. Like, I remember hearing some, because, you know, there's a core group of fans that go, that have gone, that I've been going to indie wrestling in Maine since 1997. Okay. I've been hitting Fairfield for over 10 years. I've seen a lot of the same people at every show. You know, I mean, that's how I met Mikey and Roy and yourself and everything, you know, before, and there's a group there that, like, you know, when IWE went to $15, they were like, are you serious? You know, and they lost their minds, and they didn't go to a couple of shows because of it, to prove a point, quote unquote, and everything. And
right,
you know, and I remember when you presented, you know, you had Zack Sabre Jr. against Chris Hero, and I think the tickets were $12.
Yeah, I think it was 12 and 10.
Yeah, and I'm just like, I felt bad. Like, I felt guilty. Like, I'm only spending $12 for this? This is crazy. Like, Mikey and I were talking about that. I say Mikey a lot, so our buddy Mikey, Anyways, yeah, and I'm like, this is only $12? I cannot believe this. This is only $12. This is ridiculous. I felt guilty. Like, I felt like I should give you more money because of it. And, you know, as, like, you were talking about when ticket prices went up and everything, it, to me, it wasn't a hesitation. It's like, I know you're going to deliver. Like, this show is going to deliver. This is worth my money. This is not – I'm not going to wait around. You know, I mean, and if you think about, you know, your VIP's 35, your front row's 25, your general admission's 15. So, I mean, there's ticket prices for everybody.
Right. Yeah, for sure.
Sorry. Got a little sidetracked there.
No worries.
Anyways, just I want to go back in time a little bit. So you're ring announcing for IWE. You get hooked up, like you said, with from Miyagi through Connecticut, Tier 1 in New York and whatnot. And you said even like a year and a half before the Limitless show, the first one, you had started thinking about it. What was it that made you think, you know, I can run a show. I want to run a show.
So the real seller for me was I ring announced a show in Skowhegan at the Skowhegan Legion, and it was like November of 14. And I had already thought that I was going to do this, you know, the next year, but it was just like the worst show imaginable. The locker room morale was horrible. And just like everybody's back there, like talking shit about everybody else on the show. And yeah. I just like sat there and I realized like, this is absolutely not what I want to do for, you know, a number of years moving forward. And I knew that, you know, by my experiences outside of the state that, you know, this was not how wrestling had to be.
Yeah,
and I just think it was a low point in Maine wrestling at that point. And it was just, I was just really not happy with where I was or where the state wrestling was. And I just think morale was totally down, like fans and wrestlers, everybody. So, I went home that night and I just like kind of sat down and realized, you know, this is what I want to do and I want to implement it real soon and figure it all out.
So that was November 14. You rang your first show September 15, correct?
Yes.
Okay. I had heard some scuttlebutt when we went down to, when I say we, when Roy and the Doors and I and Mikey went down to the Boston Pro Wrestling Marathon. That was the first time I had heard from one of them was telling me like, you know, oh, Randy's going to run shows. I'm like, Randy, the ring announcer for IWE? Like, oh yeah, Randy's going to run some shows. Like he's, you know, and you just, he's got plans and wait till you see what he wants to do and on and on and on. And I was just like, okay, well, you know, all right. I'm like, isn't he like 17 or 18 or something like that? Yeah, he's going to run shows. And I'm just thinking like, oh, that guy's got some balls. Cause again, like I said earlier, you know, it takes a lot. And then, like, again, I'm used to hearing all about the carny side of the business, you know, the guys trying to screw over the promoters and work them for more money. I mean, I remember there was one headliner in the WWE in the 80s. He may have entered WrestleMania one year, and he was working at a show in Lewiston, and it was time for his match, and he stopped and looked at the promoter. He goes, I want $400 more or I'm not walking out there.
Wow.
You know, and I was standing right there. Like, I was out back, and I was standing right there, and I heard that, and I was like, no shit. And so, like, that has stayed with my mind. You know, I know not everyone's that way, but it's the possibility that it could happen. And, of course, you know, the promoter's stuck. This is a TV taping. This has been advertised. There's people here to see this person, you know, and he needs to deliver. So, you know, the guy held him up, the promoter, and the promoter, you know, caved. And like, he literally waited till he got the $400 cash in his hand, stuck it in his trunks, and then he walked out the curtain, and then he wrestled a two-minute match and came back. Huh. And so in my mind, I think that, and I'm just like, that's another concern that would raise my – did that ever cross your mind at any point when you saw you're going to try to do this, or?
No. I mean, I'd heard stories of that, and no, I mean, when you work with, like, professionals, you don't have to worry about any of that. Like, that is a side. It's I think more now it's honestly promoters that try to fuck the workers, honestly.
I heard someone else saying that the other day, actually. I'm trying to think of what podcast I was listening to. But they even said themselves, it's like, the boys aren't working the boys anymore. It's the promoters that are – or the boys aren't screwing the promoters anymore. It's the promoters that are screwing the boys.
Yeah. I think that's legit because there's I would say there's a lot more promotions that try to not – either not pay or just not, you know, go through with a deal, so to speak. Whenever you have an agreement with someone, you live up to that agreement, you know, on both sides.
Right.
And if there's an issue, you work through it, you know, the best that you can professionally. But if you're working with professionals, whether it's a professional promoter or a professional, like, wrestler or whatever, valet, manager, referee, anything, there's going to be no issues like that. That sounds like a horrible situation, obviously, that happened, but obviously at that point you're not working with a professional.
So when you lined up your first show, did you have any hiccups along the way before you finally actually got
Shit. Yeah, shit tons. first of all, I had to blow a lot of smoke to make everything kind of work because we were supposed to be at the Sea Dog in Bangor originally, and this was the first hiccup, was that they double booked on the date, and then they got a hold of me like 2 months beforehand, and they're like, hey, we double booked on this date, so we're going to have to move you from the 12th to the 19th. I'm like, that's actually not going to work. So I tried a lot of different buildings, and the big problem was that at the time, you know, when I was trying to get buildings at first, I was 17, so it was real tough.
Yeah.
And then once I turned 18, which seems to be like the magic number.
Yeah.
Because
they can legally
sue you,
but
then. Correct. That's exactly it.
That's kind of what it comes down to. So, they can legally sue you now. You're not a juvenile.
Yeah. So it got somewhat easier, but there was still like not a lot of things that were available. So we ended up getting Cityside to run the building in Brewer.
Yeah.
And then there was just a lot of cancellations. Like, other than this, like, the first show, we've hardly had any cancellations. Like, you know, we've maybe had 10 to 12 over the past, you know, year and a half, other than that first show, which is exceptional. But, yeah, I think we had, I want to say around 5 to 7 cancellations, and that's within like 2 weeks of the show. But it ended up turning out, you know, for the best, because like through all the cancellations we ended up getting Anthony Green, who is now, you know, one of our top talents in the company.
I was about to
It's crazy. I mean, there was a lot of different matches booked, a lot of different talent booked that just, you know, weren't on that show, and most of them who were actually booked and weren't on the show, like, we haven't used them again. So it's kind of funny how it worked out. But yeah, we had a shit ton of cancellations on that first show. It was really hectic the days leading up to the show because of all the cancellations. But we worked around it.
Now, at any point while you were running up to that first show, did you just like? I mean, I'm sure there was some stress, but there was any point where you just said to yourself, "What am I doing? Why am I doing this? This is it. I'm not doing it again after this."
No, like, I didn't get that way until, like, this year.
Well, that's awesome.
No, I was really, like, stoked about everything because we had one of the best crowds in that building that had been there in a couple years.
I've only been to that building once, and I always go to the Fairfield shows, generally speaking, because they usually, IWE or whoever would run Fairfield and then Brewer. And I was always told, you got to go to Brewer, got to go to Brewer. The Brewer shows are better. The Brewer shows, you know, like, they're better. It's a bigger crowd. It's livelier, on and on and on. So finally, I made the trek up, and I went to a Brewer show. And I was like, I went to those same people and said, yeah, this is not what I was promised. And there was like, oh, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know what's going on. I don't know what happened. But normally. So I've never been back. And that's another thing for me, like, you know, when it comes to going to an indie show, I have to consider how far is it? Is it worth the drive? You know, like, I'm not going to spend, you know, I'm not going to drive 80 miles one way if my only hope is, well, there'll be one good match, because that's not worth it.
Right. You
know. Sorry. Go ahead.
There used to be, I mean, to give it the credit, like, IWE has run some sick shows in Brewer. Like, yeah. It's just, especially at that, like, that mark in 2015, it was very hit or miss, because unfortunately, like I was saying earlier, I think they were at a low point because they had a lot of talent who was not either not taking their bookings or booked already.
Yep.
Like when I first started announcing at IWE, they were having some pretty solid shows because they had like that Canadian carload with Jeremy Prophet. They had the either one or two House of Glory carloads.
Yeah.
They had a lot of young guys who were hungry,
and
that kind of fizzled off within a year.
I will say, I have seen some great IWE cards, great IWE matches in the past, and, you know, like when I've been to Fairfield and everything. So, I mean, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
So, you get through your first show, and, you know, obviously you seem motivated about it. In your mind, are you already thinking about, all right, when are you going to run again? Or are you thinking...
Yeah, I mean, we had already had the next date and next poster done, you know, to hand out at that show. Like, the big thing was that I didn't want to run in the same town that IWE did.
Yep.
Because I didn't want to kind of step on their toes with that. And I did get their blessing to run in Brewer before we contacted the building, which was, you know, that was good on their part. But I didn't want to run in the same, which is why I tried to go to Bangor originally, because I didn't want to run in the same town that they did. So we ended up running like about 20, 25 minutes down the road in Orono, which was where we were actually going to move the show from Bangor to Orono, but the Legion wasn't available. But we ran shows steady from November 2015 to November 2016 at the Legion.
Yep. I went up there half dozen times, I think.
Yeah.
Shows. I mean, so your first show, you had in Brewer. Second show, Orono. Your headliner was Tim Donst, right?
Yep.
And then was the Sabre show the third show?
Yes.
So how did you line up Sabre Jr.? Because I mean, that seems like an odd get, really, for.
Yeah,
our market,
so,
our location.
The original main event for that show was Ace Romero and AR Fox.
Yeah.
And I had no intention of really adding another big name to that show.
Yeah.
And Drew Cordero from Beyond hit me up. You know, we were friendly at that point, but not I consider us pretty good friends now. We talk daily almost about just everything and anything wrestling, and we work together and been a very beneficial, you know, relationship between our businesses. But at that point, we hadn't been working together yet, and he hit me up and he's like, would you have any interest bringing in Zack Sabre Jr. for your January date? Because I was on a Saturday, Beyond was on a Sunday, and then Sabre was staying in the States to do Evolve the next weekend, I believe. I think that was what it was. So Drew, you know, gave me the logistics of like a price breakdown of what the flight would be, what everything would come to on my side of things, and it was doable with our budget. So I said, "Screw it," and we booked Zack Sabre Jr. And so then a couple days later, he's like, "Yo, would you want to run Chris Hero and Sabre?" I'm like, "Shit, like." How would this work? And Hero also, it was kind of the same situation. Like, Hero is coming in for the Beyond show that Sunday.
Yeah.
Had nothing going on that Saturday. So we did the same thing with Sabre. We figured out the logistics. We put the flight and got Hero up here. And it was pretty wild because, you know, within a matter of, I would say, 7 days, we went from the main event being Fox and Romero to Sabre and Hero.
Which is crazy because that's the main event, and this is a cliche statement, but it's a factual statement in this case. That is literally a main event anywhere.
Yeah.
In the world, I mean, like they have wrestled, you know, in PWG, they've wrestled in, you know, the Evolve, in United Kingdom. I mean, all over the place, those two guys have wrestled each other,
And I've watched a couple of the previous matchups, and the real neat thing about it is the match they had in Orono is so much different from the matches that they had elsewhere.
Absolutely. But I would hold that match that they had in Orono side by side with, you know, the match I had watched not too long before that that they had in PWG. And the one they had after that. You know what I mean? And matches they've had involved. I mean, because those two guys, they go in there and they work. Do you think, I'm just free, you know, freelancing on this one, but do you think that that match helped you getting to be able to book other guys because they saw?
Yes, I think undoubtedly, because the real cool thing, and I've heard it from so many different people, is Chris Hero puts us over huge.
Yes.
And Chris Hero has actually, like, looked out for Limitless before. Like, there was a separate, like, someone had made a Limitless Wrestling email and was hitting up, like, workers.
Yep.
And unbeknownst to me, so, like, Hero hit me up and was like, hey, this is happening, and I don't think it's you. I'm like, no, you're right, because he had my email, he had my number, so he had my contact information. So it was cool that he was looking out for us there, and he hits me up every now and then, gives me some suggestions on, you know, people to book and people to look out for, and just, like, from numerous people that I've booked, you know, throughout the past year and a half, like, they just, you know, after the show, they're like, man, you know, Chris Hero put this over, and he's like, he was absolutely right, and it's real cool to hear that, because someone with Chris Hero's, you know, reputation in wrestling, giving the good word about your promotion is great.
I also have to,
like, attribute Drew Cordero, who, you know, books a lot of the guys that we've come in contact with over the past, you know, I would say 6 to 8 months, has really given a good word, because, you know, obviously I think we've, you know, gone past it, but as we were saying earlier, Maine had a bad reputation, so people didn't know, you know, if they wanted to accept a booking here or what to expect, but now it's I don't see that hindering us at all anymore because of, you know, the good word put in by numerous people.
Is there anyone that you had, like, contacted before about booking and they said, no, I'm all set, but now they're reaching out to you, or now you reach out to them again, they're like, absolutely? You don't have to name names. I'm just curious.
Not necessarily people would not say, like, no, I'm all set, but some people who I reached out to, like, early in 2016, you know, they might not have responded.
Yeah.
And now, you know, I am getting hit up by them, which is funny, but it's like, it's cool to know, you know, now we're visible to pretty much, you know, whoever. So,
yeah,
there were a few cases of that. Not too many, though. Like, a lot of guys would at least hit you back and say, you know, I'm booked on this date, but, you know, we could set something up here. Most of them hit back, but some of them didn't.
Now, you kind of touched on it a little bit ago. You said that, like, Chris Hero was giving you some recommendations or guys to look out for, this, that, or whatever. But, like, how do you, like, find some of these people to bring in? Like, say, how do you find, like, you know, like, Tyler Nitro? Or how do you find, like, some of the guys that you brought, like, the guys from Chicago that you brought in back in March? Or, you know, when you brought in the House of Glory guys? I mean, like, what is it? How do you find someone that you see them and go, ooh, I haven't, like, like, there's some guys you've brought in, like, I've never heard of. And then I'm like, these guys are amazing. Like, how do you find people like that?
Some of it's word of mouth. Like, a lot of guys, one of the big ones is Ace Romero. I talk to him. Another guy I talk to pretty much daily. He will, you know, pretty much hit me up after a show that he works and say, hey, I was just on the show, like, this guy is real good. You should get him now.
Mm-hmm.
There's a few core guys that I really trust on that notion, like Anthony Green, Ace Romero, MSP. These are dudes who are working, like, shows in the New England Northeast area.
Yep.
They kind of give me the good word on what's going on. Another big thing that helps is I go to the Beyond, like, a lot of Beyond shows and a lot of Beyond Secret shows, and I do commentary with Drew.
Yep.
And being able to sit there, like, I remember the Secret show, I think it was November of last year. There was something like 20 to 25 matches, and a lot of people who I had never met, never heard of before, and I got to watch them. Like, a couple of them have since made their Limitless debut, like Manny Martinez, who's wrestled on a couple shows, Mr. Grimm, This was the first time that I had seen any of these guys, so it was real cool to be able to see them and meet them in that setting and see what they could do, and then, you know, later on figure out a spot for them. But early on, it was a lot of people hitting me up and me checking out their work. And to be honest, like, the page gets hit up so much now that I maybe sift through it like twice a week. Like, there's literally probably 20 to 30 messages every couple days on that page. So
the Limitless Wrestling
it
page.
Does get. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it does get tough to sift through sometimes, but
yeah.
A lot of it is word of mouth from, like, guys who work my shows, or it's dudes who I see, you know, on like a Beyond or a Beyond Secret show, shows that I can attend and be able to sit back and kind of watch what they can do. But yeah, it's just a lot of that now. I mean, I do sift through the messages still. Like, that's how I found Anthony Henry. He was the guy who hit me up. He's going to be back pretty soon. And then that's the same with the Chicago crew, the freelance guys.
Yep.
Matt Nix hit me up, sent me a lot of different footage I had known of their guys already. So
yeah, I was really impressed with those guys that came in from Chicago.
They're very good. I think Craig Mitchell, underrated in that match, I feel. But I saw him at Blitzkrieg like 2 weeks ago. The dude is so good. It's stupid.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's a bunch of guys like I've never heard of before, like I said, that you would bring in, like, especially like the guys from Chicago, Mr. Grimm, you know, to name a few. And like, that's the fun of it. Like, when you have like a core group of guys that you use that are there pretty much at every show, like the Mainstay Posse, Ace Romero, Anthony Green, you know, Xavier Bell, you know, you have those guys that you're Troy Nelson, whatever, Jeremy Larry, your regulars. And then you bring in, like, you brought, like, the House of Glory guys are coming in for a while. And then, you know, like, you brought in the Chicago guys, and it sounds like they're coming back. And then you bring in, like, this show, gosh, I don't know. Like, between the last two shows, like, I was jealous I couldn't go to the Portland show.
Yeah.
And you kept saying to me, oh, no, the Portland, you know, that this Westbrook show is the biggest, you know, the most stacked show, you know, I think I've ever had, biggest card or whatever. And I'm like, I don't know, that Portland show is looking pretty awesome. And then once the card was finalized for Westbrook, I was like, oh yeah, that's a hard one to debate. between the two of those.
Yeah, the Portland show was really cool, like, to touch on that for a minute.
Yeah.
It was really cool because, you know, it's the second kind of, like, last-minute show that we've done. Like, we announced the Portland show, like, something like 25 or 26 days before it happened.
Yep.
And... you know, the other one that we ran last minute was the first Westbrook show in October of last year. But it was cool because, you know, when you're in a situation like that, you can put together matches and book guys who you might not have been able to figure out a spot for on a Westbrook show.
Yeah.
Or you might not have been able to fit this match in with a Westbrook show. And it was an unusual date, like, end of the month. We usually run somewhere in the middle, usually.
Yep.
You know, we had a lot of guys have that date open, like a guy like Leo Rush, who we've been trying to set something up for a long time.
Yep.
So it was cool to be able to figure out a lot of different matches we could do with new guys. And we had that 8-man scramble who had a lot of different people in it and a lot of debuts. So I really like that show. It was really fun.
So is your premise basically to run Westbrook every other month like you are, and then do shows in between elsewhere? Or?
Yeah, I think through at least the rest of this year, it's probably going to be Westbrook every month and a half, 2 months.
Yeah.
The goal is to have another Portland show by the end of the year. It's probably not going to happen through the summer. Probably shooting for early October.
Yep.
But nothing's set right now, but I would like to go back to the Portland Club. I really like that venue.
Nice.
The Portland Elks Lodge has also expressed some interest lately. I would like to get to the Port City Music Hall. It's very tough to find the right person to speak to about that information, but regardless, I would like to get to Portland again by the end of the year. So, but I mean, I really want to hit some festivals this year. I'd love to bring Limitless to some kind of neat festival.
Like, you mean like the Yarmouth Clam Festival or like a music festival?
I don't know. I'd bring wrestling to a clam festival if I wanted it.
Are you gonna hit the fair circuit?
Probably not the fair circuit, but yep. I've hit up a couple music festivals to see what's up. I did have something that's being planned out for early July, and Bangor hit me up recently, so I'm not sure if that's actually going to come to fruition, but that'd be something neat.
Are you, I know it's coming up here in a couple weeks, but you don't have anything planned with the Bangor Toy and Comic Con, right?
I don't. We did originally, and I'll tell the story. We were originally told, not by the owner, but by an employee of the con, that we were going to have a space on the floor, similar to what IWE had a couple years back.
Yep.
We're going to have a space on the floor, or we're going to be put in one of the back rooms of the Cross Center. And I said, whatever, you know, I just wanted to be on the premises, not off the premises. Like,
right.
I don't, it wouldn't work that way for us, at least.
Right.
So then I talked to the owner on the phone, and he's like, yeah, man. He's like, I don't know. I'm not going to tell the person's name, but he's like, I don't know what that person was thinking, but, like, we weren't given clearance to have a ring. You know, it was either, I think it was a big thing because of insurance reasons,
yep.
But they weren't allowed to have the ring or the show at the Cross Center, which I understood. I just wish, you know, we hadn't been given that false info.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that kind of messed us up, you know, booking wise with people and what we were planning out. But I did look into a show, you know, off the premises on that night.
Yeah.
It just wasn't doable anywhere, you know, within the area. So that is not happening, unfortunately. But it looks like next year we're going to figure out something better. I know he was really Chris from the con was really pushing for us to be able to be on the floor, figure something out for us, but which was, you know, really cool of him because we like working with the con. But hopefully next year.
Now, I know we jump around a lot, but this just says things are coming to me. When you're setting up a show, I mean, there's a lot more to than just you got to book talent, you got to get a ring. You know, there's a lot of logistics behind that. And like, as far as like, I don't know. How long have you had the set, the entranceway set? I noticed it at the last show here last weekend. And I'm
we've had
looks kind of new.
Yeah, we've had two different sets. We had one that we used in January, and then we've had this new one since March.
Okay, all right. So, like, is that something, like, you're like, well, I'm going to start kind of bare bones-ish, and then as things go along, where I'm going to try and grow in these other areas, like, you know, the music, like you said, the sets. Like, how do you decide who's going to do the commentary for the matches? Because I know you switch it up a lot.
So, for, like, set stuff first, we kind of go piece by piece. Like, we started originally, I bought two cameras, and I bought a small entranceway and lights, and that's what we were rolling with for a while. And then, you know, I think we took a big step up this year. Like, I think we took a step up hugely, like, all around, like, not just the shows, but production, like, everything we were doing. So I felt like we had to get a little bit of a better entrance. So,
yeah.
That's why we rolled with that. I don't think an entrance is a huge deal, but it does look better on camera. So, I mean, we've had a lot of the same equipment from day one, like the music stuff, all still the same. We still do have our cameras, but we do have Tanya, who does our work now, thank God.
She does a great job.
Tanya's she's the best. She's absolutely the best.
I was talking about this to her a couple shows ago when I was like, I said, do you realize I first bought tapes off you like 18 years ago? And she was like, yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah.
For commentary, it's honestly the best when Cordero's there, so I can have him be the set guy there. And then I make a list of like, if I have him there, I have a list. It's him and whatever wrestler.
Yeah.
And usually that wrestler always forgets that they have to be on commentary. So luckily he'll be there and he'll run to the back and either find them or find somebody different. On shows where he's not there, I make a list of two wrestlers, and yeah. usually they never remember to be there. So it's always a mad dash to find the right person to get on commentary, but usually it does work out. If I can help it, like, I try to have Troy Nelson do a bunch of matches because I love his commentary.
I was going to say, I love his commentary. He's excellent.
There's surprisingly, like, a lot of wrestlers who are very good on commentary. Like, Brian Malonis is great on commentary. Anthony Green, great on commentary. Brian Fury, when we had him.
Yeah.
Donovan Dijak, depending on what style of commentary you like, Donovan Dijak, great on commentary.
Oh, God. He says, like, good Lord in heaven, like...
It's nuts. But there's a lot of good commentators back there. I just think it's fun to have either one or two wrestlers on commentary. Yeah. And we had Luke Robinson on commentary for our Portland show. And I haven't actually heard the commentary yet, but all the reviews from everybody who commentated with him said he's absolutely great. So,
that's awesome.
I think we'll see him around the commentary booth more often.
That's awesome. That's real good. We've been going about an hour now. I don't want to keep you too much longer, but I do want to address one thing in particular. Recently, anything. Problematic.
Yeah.
I got to say, it's definitely one of your best cards that I've been to, top to bottom. You got a kid in Anthony Green, and he's hitting it all cylinders everywhere he goes, right?
Yeah.
But like him and Paul London was phenomenal. Flip Gordon against Brian Cage was a great way to open the show. I brought my cousin Johnny to the show, and he's not a wrestling fan. He wanted to go because Colt Cabana was there, and I had showed him some like Worst Promo Ever and the Wrestling Road Diaries and everything, so he went for that. And after the first match, the Brian Cage and Flip, he turned to me and he goes, he's just like, holy shit, that's how it starts? Like, and then at intermission, he goes to me, wait, does this mean this is only halfway over? And I go, yeah, basically it's halfway over. And he's like, I'm exhausted already. Like, how do you go to all these shows? And I just thought it was hilarious. But the main event, the Fans Bring the Weapons match. I'm talking to some buddies about this. I have seen a lot of Fans Bring the Weapons matches, and I've seen fans bring a litany of different things. But I've seen them bring barbed wire and thumbtacks and light tubes before, and they've never been used. And I remember standing in line before the show and seeing some fans outside, and they had, you know, light tubes or whatever, and I was just thinking to myself, like, they're never going to use those. Why are you even bothering to bring them? I mean, it just seems ridiculous to me. And then the match starts. And first of all, I've never seen so many weapons brought to a Fans Bring the Weapons match. Like, so much stuff.
Yeah, me either.
That was crazy. And I loved how you had everything at the table when they walked through. Here, set it down at the table and whatnot. But when all the light tubes started coming to the ring, I was just like, holy shit, they might actually use those. Did you know what they were going to do?
I did give them the go-ahead. I talked to the building. I looked through our insurance, and the big thing was that all the glass was to be kept in the ring, but I did give them the go-ahead.
Yeah.
I did not expect the glass to fly like it did the first time.
Yep.
The biggest thing on that was to protect the fans.
Right.
And that's why we had the slew of security at ringside.
Oh, no, that was,
But, if I had known that the glass was going to fly like that, we would have pushed him back further, because I think some people did get hit with it in the first row. We tried to protect the fans the best we could. You know, we don't run many weapons matches, as you know. Like, we've done two Fans Bring the Weapons matches and one Anything Goes match, and that's it in a year and a half.
Right.
But, so we, and when I saw what everyone was bringing in, you know, we just we were trying to protect everybody the best we could. And I think we were a little underprepared, or I was a little unknowing of what was going to happen and what was really going to transpire. But yeah. They did have the go ahead. I did tell them that glass, like, they could use that, what was brought.
The light tube log cabin, I'm going to call that, the thing that they set on the table. Did a fan actually make that and bring that, or was that a housemade item?
Oh yeah. No, they made that actually. Like, they hit me up. It was a group of guys, and they hit me up, and they're like, "Yo, man, like, we want to make something like a structure. Like, our light tube's okay." And I'm like, "Yeah, like, go for it." And I remember it was probably like 4 PM. They were out front of the building putting that thing together. So that was nuts.
I haven't seen a lot of matches. I'm going to call it a death match or a hardcore match, whatever you want to call it. I haven't seen a lot of those live. I've seen a lot on film by any means, but as far as live, I mean, I haven't seen a handful. And, I was in the front row on the opposite of the hard camera, and there was a row behind me, and I think they were Ace's friends. And the first time that Ace used the light tubes on Fox, Fox's shoulder got busted open. He was bleeding. And he kind of came over to our side of the ring, you know, and whatnot. And one of the guys behind me goes, "Holy shit, he's actually bleeding." And I turned and looked at him and I said, "Well, yeah, he just got hit with like 8 light tubes. They were in a triangle or whatever, you know, taped together." I'm like, "He just got hit with 8 light light tube bulbs. I mean, they're glass. What do you think's going to happen?"
Yeah.
He just goes like, "But he's actually bleeding." And I'm like, "Yeah, I mean, what do you expect?" And it was funny to me because, like, I watched in this guy's eyes the realization of, like, "Holy shit, like, that actually just happened." Like,
completely blew his mind. I think his whole group, like, he had a lot of friends there. I think they were legitimately concerned by the end of it, but it really transformed their belief of what professional wrestling was, which is a very cool thing that happened, even though, despite Ace's back getting carved, I think it transformed their belief of what pro wrestling is, which is a very cool thing to happen.
No, and it really is, and it was just funny to me. I was talking to I always bring a van load when we come down, so I was talking to them on the ride back, and I brought that up to them. It's just like, you know, it's almost like in his mind, he's like, "Oh, I'm here having fun, drinking a couple of beers. Like, you know, this is great. This is very entertaining and this and that." But, you know, it's professional wrestling. It's predetermined.
Right.
You know, it is what it is. And then all of a sudden he sees, like, his friend and now his opponent, his friend's opponent and everything, sees them both bleeding, like, the hard way or whatever you want to call it, from these weapons and everything. And he was just like, "I didn't think this actually happened." Like,
right.
I don't know. I found it hilarious. I thought it was an awesome realization. it's pro wrestling. It's awesome.
Yeah, I agree.
So, anyhow, cool. Well, Randy, I appreciate you chatting with me this morning.
Hey, thanks for having me, man. I had a good time.
And I'd love to do this again sometime.
For sure. Me too.
And before we go, do you want to plug anything? Any of your social medias and whatnot?
If you want any info on Limitless Wrestling, go to facebook.com/limitlesswrestling, at LW Main on Twitter, at Limitless Wrestling on Instagram, youtube.com/limitlesswrestling, or limitlesswrestling.com. By the end of the day today, is this going up? When is this going up?
I'm going to send it off to the guy that puts it up, and he'll either have it up tonight or tomorrow morning.
Okay. Well, regardless, by the time this comes out, the VIP information for our show on July 21st in Westbrook will be available for you on limitlesswrestling.com. Plus, Hysteria on DVD will be available online, limitlesswrestling.com/DVDs. And then Friday, July 21st, we're back in Westbrook for Nothing Gold Can Stay. Tickets go on sale Monday at 7 p.m. $35 VIP, $25 front row, $15 general admission, featuring the Extreme Luchador Super Crazy, Lucha Underground's Rey Fénix, AR Fox, Ace Romero, Anthony Green, Maxwell Jacob Friedman, and a lot more.
Awesome. And real quick, how do you come up with your show names?
I have no idea, man. This is literally the worst thing about booking these shows is, like, I'll sit there like a week before we have to announce the show, like, what the fuck am I going to name this show? I try to relate it, like, a lot of it I get from music. Like, Hysteria is extremely based on Def Leppard.
Right.
I get them from music or something, and I try to relate titles with things that are going to, like, transpire with the matches on the show. So,
well, No Dropkicks in the Living Room was my favorite name to date, so.
I love that one.
Awesome. Well, thanks, Randy.
Thank you.